My name's Alistair MacLennan. I was born in Blairatho, Scotland, in 1943, which makes me 69, very recently. And here we are.
Would you like to tell us something of your early childhood?
Yes. Blairatho was a very, very tiny, it's not even a village. It was so small, you know, you'd blink twice and you'd be past it, you'd be through it. Early memory was of going up a hill just on the outskirts of Blairatho with my mother to get eggs from a woman on the hill. And I remember enjoying going up that hill because the woman we got the eggs from, she was tall and thin. She had a big hooked nose, and I said, "Oh, it's kind of scary, scary woman there." And I remember one day just walking outside the house and coming to a corner just outside the house and meeting a goose, white goose, at eye level, you know, and seeing this beak just, I was coming, you know, right angle, I was coming to the corner, it was coming to the corner in a different direction, and we just met, and I saw this big yellow beak and the dark eyes at the side of the white, and it's a stunning image, I'd never seen it before. So that's an early memory. The first one I recall, actually, yeah.
It didn't attack?
No. It was just, I just remember, just it seemed like an eternity, just watch, just seeing this big yellow beak.
What did your parents do?
My dad was in the county police, and my mum's housewife. That meant that at that stage in the county police in Scotland, if somebody retired or died or whatever, then there'd be a shunting of people and you might have to go to a different village, different town, whatever. So we moved to Fairmount, you know, in my early growing up, like when Dad would move to a different town. His job would, in the county police meant he would move to a different place.
Mm-hmm. When did you get the first kind of inklings that you might be an artist?
I was when I was fairly young. I was really. The thing I enjoyed doing was art, making art in school and so on. Probably better at doing art than anything else. Used to love drawing and doing faces and things like that, you know. And so I got the feeling that I'm going to be an. I'd like to be an artist. But I was thinking of drawing and painting and stuff like that, you know, rather than what I might be doing now.
Were your parents supportive?
Yeah, they were, actually. They were. I mean, my mum and dad wouldn't have gone on to have much of an education in high school and beyond. My folks came from crofting culture, the northwest of Scotland, Isle of Skye and Wester Ross, and but I think they realised that it would be good for the kids to have an education because that way they could get jobs and so on. And they were supportive. And because I was good at the art and I wanted to be an artist, they were supportive about my going to art college and such, yeah.
Where did you go?
Dundee College of Art, yeah, Dundee. It was closest to Perth where... Yeah, I was closest to Perth. That's where I went to high school. And yeah, so I decided to go there. Yeah.
And first impressions of art school?
First impressions. I remember queuing up to, I remember queuing up, you know, for registration and so on. And we were in this corridor, I remember, a bunch of us just young, out of high school. I must have been 17, I think, at the time, 17. And a door opened in the corridor. And And this older man, quite distinguished, he looked out in the corridor and he's come here, he said something to me. So I just went in. And this man looked like some official within the institution. And he says, "Why have you come here to the art school?" I says, "Well, I want to become a student here." He says, "Why would you want to do that?" I remember saying, "Well, I want to teach art. Too many teachers of art," he says, "far too many teachers of art. Not enough artists, not enough teachers of art." And he went on like this for a while. So I was sort of intrigued by this, you know. And, yeah.
Who was it?
He was somebody who, I don't know, maybe a dean or something, mm-hmm. or whatever. I think he was somebody who I heard later was living in what was a converted church, mm. but he was an artist himself and he had some official position within the institution.
What were your early influences? What kind of artists were exciting you?
Early ones, well, Cézanne, okay, Cézanne and Van Gogh, you know, these were, whatever, yeah. I like the differences. The one was passionate and the other had a different kind of passion, more a kind of more architecting kind of passion. But I was just fascinated by their work. Although I think, you know, in retrospect, in Dundee when I was a student there was very much a kind of education about the craft of painting, and it was all very, very academic, life drawing and so on. Spent a year or so doing that before you'd actually move on to painting directly or even drawing directly from human beings. Mm. There was casts and statues and so on for it. There was that. But we didn't have very much in the way of conceptual thinking about art. It's what I realized after I finished at the time. It would be different now there with the staff they have now. But when I was a student there from 1960 to 64, there wasn't much of that. So am I speaking loudly enough for this?
Yeah.
Your purposes? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So when you left, you were making paintings?
Yeah, I was making paintings when I left Dundee. And what did I do then? Oh yeah, I went to a place called Hospital Field. It's a kind of summer school when I finished in Arbroath. It's a lovely place where people would just, there were studios there, mm. and you would have your meals made for you, and you would have maybe, I forget how many weeks we had there, just in your studios making your paintings or whatever. And there would be people there from the different art schools in Scotland. At the time there were only the four, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Aberdeen, Dundee. Uh-huh. And it gave me time to think about what I might want to do after. What did I do? I went to College of Education. It was the last year, you could get a teacher's certificate for only 6 months. So I thought, I'll do that. So I did that. And while I was there, I think I decided to do a postgrad course in America. I applied to a couple of places in Chicago. Accepted me, so I went there for 2 years.
Was that a huge change?
It was massive. I mean, it was massive. It had a huge effect on me. Because the students on the masters there, they were from different countries. There was a whole range of different countries, as well as Americans. And for me, what was significant was we weren't all doing the same thing. Mm. It was a group studio of people doing painting, and everybody had their own subject matter, and it was completely decentralized. You know, we weren't all standing around the same model or whatever. There wasn't this academic aspect. So what was fascinating for me was that it was the first time I had direct experience of realizing that you could make art in, or your painting in any way from any subject, object, material, but you had to use your own discernment as to what to make work about. And that's when I developed, I realized that you could have all the techniques in the world, but unless you had something that was pertinent for you to be saying, it didn't mean very much. So it made me think pretty strongly about the whys and the wherefores of what I'm doing.
Mm.
But even before going there, something I didn't mention, I spent a few, a couple of months maybe, teaching in a summer school before coming to, arriving at the Art Institute in Chicago, in Scotland, and I saw the work of young kids, very, very young children, you know. And that's when I realized there was something very much lacking in my painting. I felt I had been educated into, you know, the skills of how to represent, to get the illusionistic appearance, maybe super realistically or whatever. Yeah, whatever. But there was, when you look at young children's work, a whole class of them, they're working very directly from the source, the heart of art, from the inside out, not just relying on the illusionistic representation of appearance. And that's when I realized I have to find a way to get to the inside, work from the inside out, not the outside in.
Had you seen a performance yet? Was the word of performance or anything like that showing itself?
No, there was no. but while I was in Chicago, while I was there, I remember during my second year, it was a time of minimalism. I was a student there from 66, 68. It's a time of minimalism, and it was strange. I felt there was something, okay, minimalism, but there's something very limited with this as well. It felt to me like a kind of an American branch of a kind of Protestantism within the visual culture, you know, trying to get away from any kind of symbolism or allegorical references and so on. But I was still looking for some way now to, how do you get to the heart of art? How do you work from the heart of art? And I wasn't finding any kind of route to that while I was a student there from any of the teaching, you know, although I really enjoyed being there. And during the second year, you know, maybe it's a reference to the minimalism, but I thought, oh, I'd love to be able to make an artwork which filled the whole space of, say, a big rectangle or room. But you wouldn't be able to see it or experience it with any of the senses. But I'd love if people could somehow still be aware of its presence. But you couldn't touch it, you couldn't see it, you couldn't smell it, taste it, whatever. And I remember mentioning this or something like this at one of the tutorials, and the staff at the time saying, nice idea, Alistair, but I don't think you'll be able to do this. I'm telling this to a student, a fellow student afterwards, as a friend, I think it was Toby Chapman, and she said, that sounds a bit like Zen. You're trying to fill something that's, but it's empty, and fullness of emptiness, emptiness of fullness. And I said, what's that? What's the Zen thing? she said something, it's a Japanese thing, and so I started reading up a little bit on that, and sort of intrigued. At some stage I became aware of the work of Samuel Beckett, and I was kind of intrigued, and I became also very aware of the work of John Cage, and became really interested in his use of program chance and so on, and questioning values, systems we use, why certain sounds are regarded as musical and others are not, and making visual equivalences of, making visual equivalences for this, and began to ask the question, what if and why not, kind of thing. And then, I don't know if I'm making sense as a
You are, totally, absolutely.
So, when I finished in Chicago at the Art Institute, spent a year at Eastern Illinois University doing, a year and a bit, teaching contemporary art history, of which I didn't know terribly much, but... I was basically mugging stuff up the evening before giving a lecture, to be frank. And then I had a visa problem. Being a UK citizen, I had a student F1 visa, and you were given a certain amount of time after you graduated. In a certain amount of time, I think maybe 18 months or something like that, and then you would have to apply for citizenship, or you would have to apply to become an immigrant or something of America, and I didn't agree with the Vietnam War, so I don't want to go there, I don't want to be have to go to the war, whatever, Vietnam War. So it was either come back or stay across the ocean, and I thought Canada. So I managed to get to Canada, got a job in Nova Scotia College of Art and stuff, teaching 20th century contemporary art history. But that was kind of strange. They didn't have separate rooms where you could just teach the art history. It was in a theater, in a stage. So you were presenting the stuff on a stage, it was weird, bizarre. I was asked to go to a conference. When I was teaching in Wolfville, Acadia University in Wolfville in Nova Scotia, the guy who was running the art classes there asked me to go and just go to this art conference. So I went there, and I met some people from the art school in NCAD, National, I'm mixing this up now. It was the Art College in Halifax, in Nova Scotia, and we seemed to strike it off well, and they said, would you be interested in a job, with where we are? And I said, well, could be, and he said, well, would you respond to the statement? So I was sent a statement on art education, and I read it, and didn't really agree with or like the statement, so I thought, better not. And then I had, as you sometimes playfully do have, the notion of, what if? And I got a pair of scissors and cut the statement into little lines, just the lines of typing, and jumbled them and put them in the envelope and sent this back. And then I thought that was going to be the end of it, but then I was asked if to come for interview.
Fantastic.
And so on. So I did, and I was given a job there. And this was not education, and they had another job, and they asked me, well, which one would you prefer? So I'd say, well, the art one, the fine art one. Now, while I was there, that's when I, first year, I was teaching first year undergrad, And it was very experimental. And I'm coming down to your answer now. But it was by accident. I saw one or two students in the first year. They were doing stuff that looked surrealistic. And I asked them if, you know, I asked this particular student, well, have you read anything? Have you looked at any surrealistic work? Maybe there's a book or two in the library. And I suggested one or two books. And then I thought, he's not going to look at these books. He's not going to. So I decided to come in as a piece of surrealism. So I drove in with a Volkswagen van to work, and I had a pantyhose, brown pantyhose, over the head. And I thought, what I'll do is I'll just carry on just like an ordinary day's teaching. There was a staff meeting in the afternoon and so on. But I'll just do this, just be with this. And I think I had some audio cassette tapes that I'd taken out of the cassette and just stripped in at the end of the legs of, you know, either end of this. But I'll just do the day as normal, as though there's nothing afoot or nothing on the head, so to speak, just whatever, just like that. So I thought I'll just do this, and I did it. And I remember getting very strange looks by it from people. And somebody at one point said, Alistair, are you okay? Like that. And I'm saying, what? You know, as you would if you're in a normal situation. And you can drink coffee through pantyhose too. You can drink your, so, you know, going to the cafe and just having whatever. And at the end of the day, I remember the staff meeting was interesting. You know, plans for the following year, making a little intervention, just giving you. And I thought at the end of the, you know, this is possibilities. So I started beginning to do one or two things of that nature. But at the same time, I was also interested in the notion of, there was something I became aware of as well, an interest I had, was tramps in Scotland when I was growing up, and my dad was had the jobs in different towns and that. And I was really interested in outsiders or tramps, people who had fallen through the woodwork and the cultural placement and so on. And I was very intrigued by people like that. And so something about the notion of outsider, somebody doesn't quite fit. And I used to always see these people as signs or signals of something wrong in the society, because if there wasn't anything wrong, they wouldn't be outsiders. They wouldn't be misfits somehow. They would be accepted or absorbed or whatever. So I became intrigued in the arts, you know, where if you're doing things, or if you have views that are somehow in between, they're not fixed that way or that way, but you're seeing paradoxes and contradictions, and you these are very important for you, and you're more interested in the liminal interfusions. And I began to want to find a way of working where I would use the body as an instrument that could articulate the mental condition you were feeling about, you know, the cultural situation. And so I'd do things I remember as well, like I was doing painting at the as well in the studio at home in Nova Scotia, you know. But I would I remember one day wanting to, instead of showing paintings and so on, what about showing everything in the studio except the painting, you know, the bits and pieces you use. So I'd just cover a coat with all the bits and pieces and all the paraphernalia I had with you, and just walk around in a square in Halifax, like, with this stuff on, you know. So finding other ways to manifest the aspects of the creativity, but using the body as an instrument. Could you take it with you everywhere?
Sure.
You know, you take it with you everywhere.
Did you then become aware that there were others also out there doing something.
Sure. Yeah. There was talk of an artist, I forget who the artist was now, in Nova Scotia. I was intrigued by, I heard that there was some artist who came up to a restaurant, a kind of swish restaurant, in this fantastically expensive car, wearing a white suit. And I think people inside thought, very well off with him, very well treated when he went in. And he started going in every day, but from the first day he didn't wash or shave or change his clothes. And I think the whole piece was from, had to do with, you know, this important, the transition in attitudes of those working in the place from, you know, being incredibly polite and kind of deferring to this individual, to gradually becoming less and less happy, to reach a point where don't let the person in the door even. And this was his work. So, and in Nova Scotia at the time, there were lots of experimental things happening in this art school, and it was very close to New York, so you'd have artists coming from different parts of the world having their exhibitions there. But the art school in Nova Scotia had a very good visiting artist program, so the students were seeing artists of all kinds coming over. And they would want often to come to some place that was in the country, so to speak, but very close to New York. So there was a lot of experimental work going on. So in the middle of this, I was doing these, started to do these things as well, you see.
And when did
that would be in the early 70s,
yeah.
Very 1970-ish.
And when did you return?
Return?
When did you decide to go to Ireland? How did you decide to go to Ireland?
Well, it was, that was when my father had died. I was living in Vancouver at the time. There's something else I should say.
Yeah, no, please do, please.
Because something had a huge effect on me, I have to say. Because I had been studying this in books, Zen stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got a move from Nova Scotia to Vancouver, because you remember it was very, in the 1970s, a lot of the young artists and so on would just move. We traveled, even without a job lined up, you'd move.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd spend a year, a couple of years and so on. It was part of the hippie period and so on. I had some hippie friends and so on like that. Although I wasn't involved, I was just on the edge of that. I wasn't that, so moved to Vancouver, and I went to a Zen center. There was a session going, I didn't realize, but oh, Zen, I'll go there. So an old Japanese man there, Joshu Sasaki, Rinzai Zen. So I went there, and you have these interviews, you know, very, very formal. It's very, very formal, but I thought I'd try this out. And so here you are in this little room with this old Japanese Rinzai Zen master. And he says, why do you want to study Zen? I says, well, I want to know why I'm alive. And he says, that's a good reason to study it. He said, but do you work at something? Do you have a job? I said, well, I'm an artist. He says, do you paint? I said, yeah, I paint. He says, okay, go on. How do you realize your true nature while you're painting? Or he said, I remember him saying, how do you realize Buddha while you're painting? Or how do you realize God while you're painting? And he did, yeah, I remember him doing his thing with his hand. Same thing. How do you realize your true nature while you're painting? And so that's a quote. So then you're supposed to go bow and go out and meditate, whatever. And then several times a day you'd have an interview with this guy, and it'll be a 7-day session, so it'll be over 20 interviews, but the interviews are very, very short, because you'd go in, it's very formal, you go in, koan, what's your koan? You'd have to indicate what your koan is, and he says, so how do you realize your teenage wife? And he would never accept any answer I gave. Nah. And at one point he said, he looked at me and he said, not a real artist. And I felt just the, just totally, utterly deflated in the kind of sense of vacuous worthlessness kind of thing, you know what I mean? So I left any kind of job and education or whatever. I remember I just took a job washing dishes and just focused on this koan. How do you realize your true nature while you're painting? Not a real artist. And it was only in time, it was 2 years, day and night you'd be focusing on this. And you go back to your position, nah. He'd give you other koans. I was getting the other koans, no problem, but not this one. This was the one really. And it was only when you go through a stage where you exhausted all your kind of conceptual thinking and all your theorizing, all your wonder what could be, you go and get past all that until you just immerse yourself in just the process of the painting. And once you can manifest that, I remember going in one time and said, ah, yeah, good, good, ah, yeah. And then, felt as free as the air, you know, coming out and do that. But, and then the great thing is you could put that into then, it's just, you had to live it, you had to just literally be the condition. So I found that's very useful for performance.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can just, whatever you're doing, just do it totally. Basically, that's it, you know, so it's very useful. Soto is a very much softer approach. Rinzai is really, you know, it's almost like the military, like the army, you know, it's very, very severe. You have to be, you're sitting for hours and hours, getting up at 4 a.m, you know, and really, really severe. But after that, that was terrific. It was such a release for me. And you could apply that to any painting or any drawing or anything or performance. It was just so liberating, you know. So you But then when I was there, and I was living in a Zen center, I'd gone out in Vancouver, going down to Sashin's at a place called Mount Baldy, 20 or so miles outside of Los Angeles, roughly that distance. Then coming back to Vancouver, and news of my father had died. So I realized then I'd been away from home for about 8 years, from being a student in Chicago, you know, and on the master's. Between then and just living in Vancouver in the Zen Center, and coming back then to Scotland, you know, for my father's funeral. And it's when I realised, when I got back to Perth in Scotland, that I'd, as I was saying, I'd never been even to Aberdeen in Scotland. I thought, what a contradiction, you know, I just travelled across the Atlantic and I've never even been to this city. It's only about 2.5 hours by bus from Perth, where I grew up. So I thought I should get a job closer to home. I should find a way, you know, to live closer to home, get to know it more. And as I was saying to you, I had been interested in the work of Carl Jung, you know, a Swiss psychiatrist, and his interest in synchronicity, the concept of synchronicity, like things liking to be together from totally different seeming aspects, locations, places. And so I just looked up on the newspaper, you know, seeing if there was any jobs, and I saw the word Jordanstown. And it was very almost identical to the Jordanstown, but Jordanstone, so close, Duncan Jordanstone College of Art. So I thought, synchronicity, I'll apply for this. And it was in Belfast, Northern Ireland. That's why I came, that's why I'm in Northern Ireland. It's just that. If I hadn't opened the newspaper and seen that word and thought synchronicity, there's no other reason. But even then, I thought I'd just, if I got the job, I'd be there for 3 years and go back to Canada. But I remember getting at the interview in Belfast. It was 1975, and it was during the Troubles and so on. And during the interview, a bomb had gone off, and the sky went, you know, dark, very dark, with the pigeons and seagulls and stuff. So, the pigeons, rather, from Harland and Wolff, you know, the shipping area. And I remember the person who's in charge of the interview saying, "You're not afraid to come here because of the Troubles and so on." And I remember having been a student in Chicago, you know, you'd open the Chicago Tribune and it's maybe on page 23, you'd read about a few murders that had happened in the city. But, you know, it wouldn't be on the front page, it would be way back. So Chicago was a tough enough place to live in. Now that was intriguing. I remember hearing Muddy Waters, and I used to love going to hear the blues music in various locations in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But I stayed in Northern Ireland, and I'm very fond of the people. This is a strange thing. I'm very fond of the people. Very warm, down to earth. And when I got to the art school there, there were two very good teachers, and there were some really interesting things happening in sculpture. Adrian Hall was teaching sculpture, and he's obviously doing really good work as a teacher there, and I could see the work some of the students were doing. It was very surprising to me, because I had a thought from the stories you'd be hearing in the newspapers and so on, that it would be very, very tight and rigid and academic in a kind of older, not very avant-garde sense. But that's not what was happening in some of the studios. But that wouldn't be making any news, but I was intrigued by that. But outside of the art school, there was almost nothing for the young artists. There were no alternative art spaces. So I thought, things I'd learned in Canada, because there were so many artist-run spaces in Canada, in Vancouver and so on, Western Front and so on. So I became involved in wanting to try to be part of setting up some artist-run situations outside of art school, so that students, when they graduated, could actually carry on as artists. Because when I first went there in 75, when students graduated, you never heard about them again. It seemed to disappear. There was, you know, it was like that. So, so I became involved in doing things like that. And, yeah.
Can you tell us about some piece of work that you had made at that time? Something that was significant of yours at that time?
Roughly what period?
In the 70s, in the early 70s.
In the early 70s? You mean when I was living in Belfast?
Yeah, when you'd arrived.
Well, I thought then, that's the thing. There was nobody doing performance in Belfast at the time. Joseph Boyce had made a visit, I think, in 74 or something to the art school. Whatever. And he had left a little bit of money, or promised a little bit of money, to help, I think, some small branch of Free University or something like that. And a number of us got together, I think it was in 78, and we set something up called Art and Research Exchange there. But I think it used some funding that he had made available initially, anyway. Well, I started doing performance in the streets because nobody was teaching performance. There was no ongoing performance set up there. And it was just like another way to show students another way of doing things. But it was quite shocking for people, I think, at the time, because they were doing it in the streets and doing it... I would do it in the college, but I wouldn't tell anyone when I was going to do it or where. And it wouldn't be in gallery spaces or anything. Be like you turn a corner and there's this thing, you know, And I was just trying to set up other ways of negotiating time and space, but using one's physical and mental presence in a situation that would raise questions, and wanting to do work that would have people wonder, why is somebody, what's this, why is somebody doing this? I remember doing a piece of work just standing outside the art school in the public square there, and I don't know, I'd done something, put some colouring on the face and whatever, blue or whatever, and I was just standing quite still, I think, at one point, and there was somebody, I was aware of this trajectory coming in from the left-hand side, and somebody coming, walking straight towards me, you know, just from a direction. And this guy came right up to me and said, if God had wanted you to have a blue face, he'd have given you one. Walked right off again. Yeah. So I still remember, it was just out of the blue, this thing. Yeah. Yeah. And Wednesday afternoons was kind of a sports period, sports afternoon. So I thought, I'll do performance on Wednesday afternoons, you know, just to get something going and offer an alternative. Mm. Not wanting something instead of, but as well as, you know, so to give another possibility for students to do work on, to think of as a way of making work. And then again, during the troubles and so on, you'd be very much aware of wanting sometimes to do things in the streets, but getting threats from the neighborhood you're living in.
Mm.
You know, just I remember that, being threatened for some of the work I was doing. Because people couldn't, it might look disturbing, or what is this? What's he, you know? It doesn't look like something we're familiar with, whatever. But again, wanting to do something that would pick up on, you know, there's this Irish saying, same difference. You know, underlying commonalities between seeming differences and so on. And I became aware of, you know, in the political, religious, social, cultural interlinks and problems and differences and schisms, you know, you'd be aware of underlying contradictions and commonalities, and you'd be wanting to address some of this in the work. Mm. So I'd be doing some of this stuff on streets and so on as well. Some of the work dealing more overtly with certain political issues, some more covertly and some more elliptically, and you know, so. And then somehow, I don't know how this happened, but I started getting invitations to come off and do work, you know, elsewhere. And I used to enjoy going off doing work elsewhere and then coming back to Belfast and doing work. The art school was very good, I remember, during the 70s and 80s and so on, of allowing you to go off and do your work and come back. They were, you know, very flexible with that. And I think they regarded as the students, I think, responded if the staff were going off and making their own work, you know, because you weren't just teaching, you were a practitioner as well. And,
Did you... you still carried your Zen teaching through all of this at the same time, and that's a kind of constant thing at the core of you?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I still use that. So I'm grateful to this old Japanese guy.
Yeah.
He's now about 103.
Wow.
He's still doing sessions.
My God.
Yeah, I don't know.
And at that time, I think that's when everyone became aware of you. It was suddenly these images came out into the world of you. And they were all of a static person, of a person standing somewhere, being immovable, being... and you were aware of what was going on around, but there was this image mm-hmm. of this person standing still, kind of holding a certain time. Mm-hmm. When you were doing that, were you aware of the audience that were you were constructing around you, and that people were actually talking, and it was extending outwards?
Yeah, you could feel people's, you could feel the presence, you could feel the presence in a way, you know, though physically you might be still, but you could feel the presence. Mm. After a while, of course, you'd be doing work with movement as well, you know, but still with maybe a very similar mental attitude.
And were you taking the same kind of works to other places when you were going to other countries?
Well, sometimes, again, like, you know, having come through as a painter, you know, and you'd think of... I mean, often as a painter, you would feel the canvas or the paper beforehand, and you'd maybe want some aspect of the specificity of mm-hmm. the material that you're using to come through and affect how the image is made, rather than just having the image in mind and just doing it, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but you might work thematically and. You know, you look like some painters like Mondrian, for instance, you know, variations on the perpendiculars and horizontals and so on. So you might work thematically, you might have certain elements you would use in different places, but you'd articulate them differently depending on site and location and specificity of the atmosphere in a space or room
and building. Is that when the longer work started, when the durational works?
Yeah, there was. I remember thinking, okay, I'm a young guy now. I would have been about 30-ish. See, when I went to Belfast, I would have been, that was 75, 40, I'd be 32. I was 32 at the time. And I had just, this is the end thing, I just come through this, you know, passing through, getting through this koan thing with this about the art. I would have been about 30 then, you know, 30. And I realized, say, in when I was in Belfast, okay, in my 30s, and I wanted to also, I was interested in trying to, I was interested in questioning, you know, the pattern, the rhythm we have, you know. We sleep for a certain amount of hours, we work for a certain amount of hours, then we have, say, leisure time or family time, a certain amount of time, but then we have this kind of rhythm. And I was interested in to what extent, if one were to break the pattern, would we be able to make breakthroughs in perception and in how we conceive of the world and so on. So I began to become interested in doing things where maybe you wouldn't sleep for a good while or whatever. And again, this is partly related to the meditational thing, but again, I wanted to just, test, and I knew that it's better if I try this now when I'm young and strong. If I do this in my 50s or 60s, you might have a heart attack, you know. So, but I just wanted to see what perceptions you could have, and so became interested in doing things for 24 hours, 48 hours, 72, 144, and stuff like that, you know, and largely maybe not eating or sleeping throughout, but at the same time doing action, doing the performance. And just being intrigued by, say, a certain rhythm and day and night. And then, again, people coming into a space, and say, I remember doing something in the Air Gallery in London, and people would come in maybe at 2 or 3 in the morning, and you're walking around this kind of oval of flower on the floor with this thing dangling from your neck that was actually articulating the way you'd move and walk, and just this kind of rhythm, this kind of shop front window type space, you know, coming back. And being treated, the same people often would come in, but in the day, but also at night, and they'd respond differently at night as well, in the early hours of the morning. So we just came really intrigued by the cycles and how to negotiate the ongoing moment within, you know, a period of hours and hours and hours.
An awareness in other artists. I think you're responsible for awareness in other artists of the shift of time in performance work, that people hadn't really done that before. They hadn't really, they had the discipline or the training to test it. And so the legend of what you were doing spread throughout other performers, younger performers, very quickly.
It's intriguing you say, because I'm not really aware of that.
Right.
You know, I'd be working in Belfast and being asked to go off and do things, but I was never, just not.
Now that piece in the Air Gallery in London, that was talked about for months and months and months and months in every art school I ever went to.
Well, I see, I'm not even aware of that.
All right, that's interesting. No, because it was suddenly there was aware there was somebody doing a performance, doing something called performance, was actually doing it outside of a time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the shocking thing was it separated entirely from the theatrical time.
Uh-huh.
Even more than Samuel Beckett, even more than anybody else. Suddenly, mm-hmm. it was existing in a time which nobody had any experience of.
Mm-hmm.
It had your name on it.
Well, I just wasn't aware of that, you know. Yeah. It's just maybe you see, maybe there's a kind of autobiographical aspect in all this too. Mm. Maybe if I were to. My folks from the Highlands of Scotland, yeah. Northwest, certain values and so on and so on. But growing up in the south of Scotland, we're talking about the same country.
Mm-hmm.
But and I would have gone to school in various, you know, towns, small places, in Perthshire, Perth and Kinrosshire in Scotland. And in each different place you'd go, you know, obviously they need to make friends and so on, whatever, and the attitudes of people in the centre of Scotland are so different from the attitudes of people from the northwest, whose first language had been Gaelic, and so on. It's massively different. So I had even growing up, I had a sense of a kind of a liminal in-betweenness, mm-hmm. didn't quite fit in the north, didn't quite fit in the middle. Where is home, really? You were in this transitioning condition, or... okay, I have to mention something. I also had question marks for me about the religion, you know, mm-hmm. from the northwest. Mm-hmm. I had some questions there, some doubts, some questions, and I spent a fair amount of time on my own as a young person, trying to come to terms with seeming contradictions,
mm-hmm.
Of, you know, just your human values and so on and so forth, and what's it all mean, and I'd have questions like, what does it mean to be alive, and so on. I'd be asking myself, maybe when I was even just young guy in my very early 20s.
Mm.
So the business of, and you don't want to hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't quite fit, there's more a kind of a feeling of a both and rather than either or, you know, not quite being within the one fixity, but so I think just that aspect as well was somehow played a part in some way, you know, within the sense of where are you? Where's home? Mm. Where it's nowhere and anywhere, wherever you happen to be, you know. And again, so the Zen thing I got from the old teacher is there, you know. It's
hand in glove, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very much. It's very much this. So and it's okay. There's something else. I loved some of Edward Hopper's paintings. I used to. And I just love that sense. And some of them, where to be a human being or one or two people in the frame, so to speak. But as you look at the work, you got a sense that the work seems to be conveying, whether it was the intention of the artist or not. This is the thing I love. Sometimes when you look at work, it says something anyway, you know, maybe beyond the artist's intention or partially not, but you became aware of something about the person in the work. He, she's not completely satisfied. There's some kind of a sense of something beyond or out with the frame, some sense of completion or completeness or wholeness seems to be, some need for that seems to be manifest, and it's some, there's a kind of lack that's being manifest in the person's psychological manifestation within the canvas. And you become aware of this kind of silent anguish or need for completion. And it's beyond the frame, beyond the limit of the frame. But I became very interested in working beyond the frame, you know, using this the painting term, or out with, and being able to slip in and out of it, you know, but not be contained or trapped within it, kind of thing. And I became aware also of one of the reasons, it's interesting how these things get layered, one of the reasons I left Scotland in the first place to go off to Chicago, was I sensed that technically I could do all the painting stuff there, whatever, but I looked at the art world in Scotland at the time. It's the RSA, and for me at the time it was incredibly limited. And there was a certain range of work one could do, but if you were wanting to do work that was more questioning or more raw, even though it was still, you know, fairly true, it wouldn't be accepted because it wasn't quite polite enough or something, and it was just so limited, it felt so limited, and I know I could do it, but I didn't want to. I remember thinking, no, it's too sophisticatedly inadequate for. I want to be an artist. I don't want to be just a polite painter.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be that. I want to. You know, it's the thing you're alive for. You want the art to breathe life, to be alive. That's why I was so fascinated by young children's work when I was, in the summer school camp thing, and thinking, how can I? It was only after having come through the Zen thing that I could make a mental. How as an adult can you arrive at the equivalent of what the young child is going through when he or she is doing his or her drawing, painting? You know, you can't fake the innocence of a child, but how as an adult can you work from the heart of art? You know, that is, you know, the adult equivalent of what the child is doing when he or she is doing it so directly.
I think one of the things that made those long pieces so distinct was they weren't about isolation. They weren't about alienation. They were kind of about exactly the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what people who never actually experienced them couldn't see. You see something mm-hmm. in the photograph that looks like that, but yeah. the reality, mm-hmm. the tangible reality in the air,
mm-hmm.
the atmosphere, the tension, the electricity is something else.
Yeah.
It's transient, it's transportive.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the things I got from the old Zen guy. I mean, he was in the difficulties, I remember the difficult phases of it. He'd be, you know, just, we'd be indicating that we know we're not separate from anything. You know, everything's interfused, nothing's cut off separate. It's mm-hmm. just that the ideas we have tend to, in the binary ideas, you know, of self as distinct from other, you know, here's me, that's the floor, that's, I mean, these things, when we're using the structure of language, if we're aware we're wearing these conceptual spectacles, if you want, it's useful if we're aware that we're using them, but then, if we forget we're using them and it's simply a device for making certain kinds of meaning associations, if we forget that, mm-hmm. then we take what we learn from it and think this is how actuality is, and it's not. It's just as it appears or seems through these particular conceptual spectacles. If we were to take these off and put on another pair, we'd see through that pair, and so on, and so on, and so on. But if we were to take them off and not put any on for a while, then how do you manifest that actuality? Going through the Zen experience was very, 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 this was fantastically instructive for that, because it's very much about not being separate from anything. And if you can be in it, and even though you're just working seemingly as an individual, it's about the interfusion, you know, breath by breath of the situation one's in relation. It's always in relation, in relationship, not separate at all, you know, not being separate from anything, really.
I'm thinking, it's a sort of crude jump, but it's a sort of prompt. I'm thinking to say something about black market, because suddenly you're in the room with other people, which is a kind of new venture, a different venture, where there's a kind of a sharing, an association, an exchange.
Yeah.
How did that begin?
How did that begin?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, it's interesting when I think back. This would have been in 89, I believe, 89. And I had been asked to do something in Prague, at an event in Prague. And I think this might have been, it might have been organized by, or I might have been invited by somebody called Thomas Ruler?
Thomas Ruler
in Prague at the time. And there was this performance event taking place, and it seemed like in a kind of park area in Prague. And I remember just, I'd been invited to do my own piece there. And again, from having been a painter, when you're looking at the space, what space will I use? Because there was a certain flexibility of what space you'd use. And there was a section of ground in the park I was drawn to for some reason. And because it looked like it was, again, in an in-between kind of condition, it looked as though it's not just been recently dug. It's not clean. It's not unclean. It's an in-between. It's in a kind of in-between state. I was attracted to this, and I did something. It was called Bag. I called the name as Bag to Prague, B-A-G, Bag to Prague. And I just basically took the content, you know how sometimes I do, take a bag of bits and pieces I might use, I might not use. So I just basically just slithered the bits and pieces that I thought I might use, just over the ground, over a section of ground, and a kind of a line that was broken, disjuncted. And I used bits of metal and wire and things that were just in the on the ground, you know, as part of this kind of line thing. And sitting in a chair facing this with the bag at the end, the, you know, it was kind of awkward, kind of disjuncted line with the bag at the end and me on one other end. And I was just doing that for a bit of time, for a number of hours. And I remember what happened. Oh, yes. It started thunder and lightning. And the rain coming down. And the joy in a performance of getting soaked, drenched to the skin. Yes, I love it, you know. Just get soaked to the skin. Just be there. Savour it, you know. And it's just that. And, just it was lovely. Just, and the light, at the same time, you know, there's kind of apprehension. What if I'm in the middle of it? What if I get struck? What if the lightning hit? But at the same time, if it happens, it happened. If it happens, I just loved the rawness of the situation. And at some stage, I became aware of somebody people would come up before the thunder and the lightning, when people were coming up and asking you things and so on. Members of the public and, you know, whatever, you'd be saying one or two things and then go away, whatever. But then the thunder and lightning after a number of hours came, come down. And then at a certain point, I was aware of not so much rain, and I became aware somebody was holding an umbrella up. And they did that for a while and then went away. And it was after this had finished that I met some other people there. And I didn't know who these people were, black market people. What's this, you know? I forget exactly what happened, but they were to be doing a performance. I don't know if it was the next day or something. And I was asked, would you like to, you know, just see if you like, you know, just come in for a few minutes or whatever. So I thought, yeah, thanks. Why? Yeah, sure. So there was this bunch of people doing this. It looked weird, you know, just a bunch of people doing this thing simultaneously. So I was thinking, they seem like they're having a good time. So I remember going in and there was somebody rocking a little bit behind me and whatever, and just come in for a few minutes. And then I came out of it. I just came out and I was just looking at them and saying, seems to be joy. Thomas Rule was doing something interesting with water. He usually does something really intriguing with water, just the image of it. It was some kind of a puddle thing, you know, just kind of punched by the loose. And then so I went back in again, did a little bit of thing, and come out. And then afterwards, I don't know. I got asked. I think, would you want to join us, or would you want to be, you know, would you want to, you know, basically, would you like to play with us, you know? And I think I said, yeah, sure, sounds like good fun. So it was just a very casual thing like that. But I've actually enjoyed it very much. It's really great, because you don't know what any of these people are going to be doing. I mean, you might arrive at a performance with some materials that you might use or not, and then whatever. And then somebody might see them. They might go, oh, gosh, look at that. And they might use these things, like kids might be together, whatever. And you can play. I mean, I really enjoy that. And it's really good, you know, especially when you do work on your own as a performer, you know, kind of alone as a performer. It's nice sometimes doing a performance with one other person or one or two. It's kind of, I enjoy doing that as well sometimes. But with a group, and you haven't a clue what's going to happen. And for me, again, it's a bit like playing together. It's lovely.
It's a freedom.
Yeah, it's freedom.
Can we move on a bit to now?
Yeah.
You were saying earlier that you've retired, you've finished teaching. That was a big part of your life.
Yeah, teaching, I really enjoyed it. I mean, after I'd been in Belfast for a year or two, working the first years, my experience in Canada was terrific, you see. I could include some of that in the stuff in Belfast, which I thought was, you know, it's like offering the benefits of what you thought was valuable for yourself, you know, to people. But after about a year or two, the guy who, David Speer, English guy, he had the notion to start a master's course and drew up this thing, a master's course, and I got asked if I would run it.
Mm.
So I said, yes, you know, okay, I'll do that. And it was a 48-week course.
Mm.
And I suppose I felt responsible for, you know, if you're running a master's course, it's a step up from a BA kind of thing. So I became conscious of the importance of the quality of the work and so on. So I gave a lot of my time to that. And it was very much part of... Again, one of the things from the Zen, yeah, the Zen is that, you know how very often people think, oh, there's my work as an artist, and then my work is a job, is teaching. Somehow the art is more important than the whatever. But with the Zen influence, that's not the way it is at all. It's whatever, it's basically sharing creativity.
Mm.
And you're doing that when you're making art, but you're also doing it in the teaching, you know, so it's, I found it was terrific. I got a real buzz out of teaching on the master's course, because the issue being, how can you help this person, the student, you know, to realize his or her aims to maximum advantage in terms of their wishes for their work, not yours for their, but in terms of how they are going, how can you do that? How can you maximize that for this other person, you know, within the time that you have and within reason and so on? So that was so, and found fascinating, intriguing, just trying to do that.
How do you view the future?
The future?
Yeah.
It's not here yet.
Yeah. I knew I was going to get a Zen answer. I'm just thinking, if when you were 30, you had a kind of idea of where you were.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose I'm kind of asking, like, now you are this side of teaching.
Yeah.
And do you see a territory for the work? Do you see?
Yeah.
Well, I kind of know the answer because you already told me.
No. Well,
it's a flow, isn't it?
It's a flow, and as I was mentioning to you maybe earlier, a few years ago now, some of us got together in Belfast. It was in relation to a series of invitations over the years to Poland.
Mm.
I don't know how this happened now, but it happened. And I got invited to Poland a number of years, and one or two other artists living in Ireland, from Ireland, invited over there. And a Polish artist came over and did some work in Belfast, and we got in talking about reciprocation kind of thing. How do we do a mutual kind of reciprocation thing? And we began to have a sense of, it'd be good if we could actually begin to invite some artists from other countries to Belfast, you know, so they could do their work, but the young artists also could see their work.
Mm.
And then we had the notion of, well, what are we going to call ourselves? Be Beyond. We ended up calling ourselves Be Beyond. And it's also something, okay, beyond education, you know what I mean? But I became really intrigued by it because we don't have any formal performance courses, you know, performance art courses at the Art College in Belfast or the university. So it's all within the broader, you know, fine art program of sculpture, painting, printmaking, whatever. But we know a lot of sculpture people basically are doing installational things, you know, basically it's installation. And also people maybe wanting to do performance. But without there being a formal setup for performance, and sometimes people are a bit shy about vulnerability, you're feeling vulnerable about, you know, putting yourself on the line. So we thought that an organization that could involve students or ex-students and or anyone who might want to, who could be interested in performance. We started doing these things called monthlies. Kind of linked to the notion of the black market thing of people doing stuff simultaneously. And we're doing that every month now in Belfast. We're doing it for a good while now. And afterwards going for a drink and socialising a bit and if people want feedback. And it also gives people a bit of practice of, and it kind of sets a kind of sense of community inside, outside, beyond the art school and so on. And we're also trying to invite some artists to, from elsewhere who do performance but who also run events in their own countries, bring them to Belfast, so they can do their work and people can see it, the young people can see it. And then some of the local artists might be doing their performance too, and then they might get invited abroad as well. So we're trying to get a kind of local, national, international thing happening like that, although we're dealing with very, very limited funding. But we're just keeping this monthly thing going and trying to develop and it's happening. It's a kind of community of people who are very open about the possibilities of using the body as an instrument. Kind of thing. And it takes all kinds of forms. And some of them now are involved in being part of artist-run organisations. There's different kind of art groups now in Belfast, with run by, you know, committees, if you want, Platform Arts, Catalyst, and different. And they do their own artwork, but then they also work maybe together as groups, and they also do stuff with Be Beyond, you know. So I'm very much, you know, in a way, the teaching things, in a way,
continues.
It sort of continues, you know. Yeah. Although I don't think of it as teaching. You know, it's just basically doing the art, sharing the art experience. You know, doing that. Sorry for having waffled.
No, please. This is great stuff. This is absolutely great stuff. I sometimes have a feeling that I'm kind of glad I'm not a young artist at the moment.
I know what you're saying.
I'm just wondering if...
No, I know what you're saying.
It's harder in a different way now.
Yeah, I think so, for a lot of young artists. Yeah, that's what I sense. When you say that, I'm curious as to what you actually mean, of course.
I think it always, from what you said, I recognise everything that you said, and it was always possible to do it. One could just do it. You just had to make that decision to do it.
Yeah.
And there was generally a support or something or an interest that would absorb it.
Yeah.
Or actually now there seems to be something that's blocking everything. There's a negativity that kind of blocks the idea of that freedom, that ability to step forward and take it.
Yeah.
I don't know, it might just be me, I don't really want to.
No. But it's interesting you mention this now, right? Are you thinking this is a cultural thing or?
I'm not sure. Something in the air, something that's difficult in a different kind of way. Sorry, it's turned into a conversation.
Are you thinking that... Well, I mean, okay, I mean, I'm saying, yeah, okay, cultural conditioning and the way people are, It's the fear of being different, the fear of standing out, the fear of whatever. I mean, it's interesting. I travel into Belfast. I live outside of Belfast, a place called Green Island. It's not a green island. Well, it's, the whole of Ireland's a very green island, but this place is called Green Island, but it's not an island, the section I'm staying in. It's only about 10, 15 minutes, 15 minutes maybe by train from where I get off and walk down to, I have a studio just behind the art school now where I do works on paper as well as, you know, preparing performance things and stuff. Why am I mentioning this? I think I might have lost my train of thinking. Oh yeah, I watch people. I mean, I'm fascinated, you know, to come from doing portraits and stuff from the past. I'm fascinated by people. You know, all these variations, you know, of eyes and nose and mouths and the way people are, how the physical, the bodily presence, how they are, you know, the mind inside the body, how we are. And I've seen on it's interesting on the trains, to what extent people are doing the like that, like over there, and with the stuff on, whatever, you know, and then multitasking if you want, but not actually being actually present.
Yeah.
In direct communication, just, you know, sitting in chair and seeing the window and just. I mean, it's trying to do a whole plethora of things simultaneously, but you're not actually experiencing the basic aspect of what you're going through, you know. So, but again, I'm very aware there's a kind of there's the manipulation of commodification and the way in which we are so seduced into having and getting and being certain kinds of ways, you know, as economy and all that, business, whatever. And, okay, maybe people are a bit afraid to stand, just be, you know, just question it or go or not. Feel you don't have to go with this. I don't know. There's the herding. Instinct aspect. The surface, and we've seen that, and the way people are so. But having said that, you see, I'm aware as I'm saying this, somebody can, oh, here's this older guy saying this, this old man saying this, you know, kind of thing. And I remember when I was a young person, if an older person would be saying this, I might also be thinking, aha, you know. And here it comes full circle. But I understand what you're saying.
Okay, it comes full circle. Uh-huh. Is there any chance that in 10 years or 20 years' time, uh-huh, you will wander off to the northwest?
Oh, yeah.
Into the beginning, into a quiet, silent place?
Oh, yeah, it could very well be. Well, sometimes I joke to people saying, you know what I mean, look at all the hassle of all this performing, you know, them, you know, I mean, joking about, you know, a wee artist Barry and doing a little watercolour landscape, you know, whatever, you know, talk about that. Why not? I can't see it, but why not?